Hey everybody, Scott Jones with Athlete on Fire. Hope you guys enjoy the show. I'm here with Ken Claremont from traintohunt.com. It's an event that kind of combines like a Spartan race and bow hunting and archery. It's pretty cool. I'm going to dive in, see what I'm made of in this world here in April in Colorado. Big shout out to the family. I've said that this audio project, Athlete on Fire, and all the things I do with it are going to be for my boys, my family, for when I when I'm gone one of these days, so they can hear my voice and see how I interacted with the world. So big shout out to little Wyatt and little Wes. They're 7 and 5, and they just played their first soccer game last weekend. It was very entertaining, I might say. Wyatt, good job, buddy. You're getting way more aggressive. Wes, first time ever playing soccer. I thought, not too bad. You scored a goal and you had to come over and do a little dance to show us all about it. So definitely gonna give them some more shout outs as I continue this project, Athlete on Fire. Enjoy the show. I think you guys will really like it. Kenton has a lot to say. I felt like I ran out of time because there's so much to cover. So enjoy, and thanks a lot. Until next time, everybody. Athlete on Fire here. Scott Jones, your host. Pumped today. I'm gonna learn a lot today, I think. You know, like when you get into some new stuff athletically, you either have really good friends or really bad friends. They're either really good because they're introducing you to a new sport or a new activity or a new epic adventure, or they're bad because they just want to watch you suffer. So it's probably a little bit of both. So this is going to be part of that story today. One of my buddies who introduced me to our guest today. If you guys have not checked out Athlete on Fire and you're coming over from Train to Hunt people or from Kenton's camp or just people who are interested in this world of the hunt competition stuff that's out there, go check out Athlete on Fire. We have tons of really interesting athletes. A lot of them can probably help you in your training, and while you're training, you can throw your earplugs in and have some entertainment. So you can check that all out at athleteonfire.com. We got Kenton Claremont on the line today out of Spokane, Washington. Founder, I believe, of Train to Hunt. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. I am the founder and owner of Train to Hunt.
Awesome. You know, every time I start saying founder, I'm like, wait a second, does he have a co-founder? I always forget.
Yeah. Well, the truth of the matter is that there was a co-founder. When Train to Hunt came to life back in 2010, myself and a guy named Dan Staten, who now has Elk Shape, we were in business together. We owned CrossFit Spokane Valley, and we saw a need for specific training for hunters, and so we started Train to Hunt just as an avenue for hunters to get specific training for their hunts. And then a couple years later, as you know, running a couple businesses, and I started a family, and there was just had so much going on that we thought, hey, both our businesses are kind of suffering right now because we're having to juggle two of them. Why don't you take one? I take one. We can focus all our time on the individual businesses and grow them well, and keep hunting together in the fall. So, yeah, we split in 2013, I think, 13 or 14, 13, I think. And ever since then, I've been doing the Train to Hunt gig, wearing all the hats, and Dan's been doing a bang up job with CrossFit Spokane Valley. So that's the world that's the world I come from anyway.
No, it's cool. I think when you're growing a business that you're really passionate of, like sometimes going it alone until you figure it out is better. And then once you get to that critical mass, you actually know what your needs are a little bit better, if that makes sense. I don't know if you're experiencing that or not.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, one of the things about having a business partner, there's so many advantages to it. But the one thing that I found is that things can happen a lot quicker because you're the only decision maker, you know, and right. you can throw things out there and see if it sticks, and then make adjustments a lot quicker than if you have to run everything by a partner. Again, there's a ton of advantages because you have somebody to run it by, but it's been definitely an adventure over the last 10 years for sure.
No, that's cool. So, I'm going to kind of set the table here a little bit. First of all, one of my goals for 2019 for Athlete on Fire is to find more regular guests. And the reason is, A, I don't have time to do Joe Rogan-style five-hour shows. That's
right,
number one.
Right.
And B, like, you know, we start diving in, and I don't want to feel like I'm trying to cram everything into a 45-50 minute show. So I think like having like the current events of the individual guests that I have that I think are leading somewhat interesting lives in this whole space that we all kind of share. So I think like the space that you occupy, if we don't get to everything I want to today, we definitely are going to do it again, because I love your story already just from talking to you on the phone a couple times, and this is going to be interesting. So for people listening, if there's stuff that you want to know, if there's stuff we didn't touch on, go ahead and shoot me a message, and we'll make sure that we get that in the future. But I have a very selfish goal today. I'm going to learn. So backstory, Kenton, we have a mutual friend, Charlie Pappas, who won the national championship for your competition that we're going to talk a lot about today. And Charlie and I work out together, and he works at the gym that I do a lot of work with and coach at and all this stuff. So we got this mutual buddy, and Charlie, I interviewed him for another podcast, and I've always wanted to learn how to legitimately hunt. Like, my family's from West Virginia. I went to college in West Virginia. Like, 90% of my baseball team were hunters, and I was more interested in the baseball. Like, I was really focused on that. So I never really took the time. Then I moved to Colorado, and the barrier to entry out here seems a lot bigger, whether it is or not, I don't know. But it's been on the list for a long time, and specifically bow hunting. I wanted to do it a little more old school, if you will, without even today not knowing a lot of what I need to know. So I'm going to be picking your brain on that, because I know that's a huge part of the education to get people interested in the sport, and what you do, and then just hunting and conservation, all the things that most people that do this stuff are interested in, which I'm interested in a lot of those things as well. So we're going to talk about that competition for sure, but I think let's just start with you really quick. Family, you married, kids, like what's your day-to-day life like? I think that'd be interesting for people to know.
So I have twins who are just about ready to turn 6, and I have a son who is 8. I'm married to a local girl here in Washington, Heidi, and it's awesome. I mean, honestly, like, my day-to-day routine is get up, get the kids ready for school, get them to the bus stop, and then I spend probably anywhere between 6 and 8 hours a day creating content and creating relationships within the industry, and you know, working out and trying to come up with programs and just trying to create new ways and new content to reach more people and fast track them, not only fast track them in the hunting sense, but really my whole goal was to get people who were interested in the outdoors or specifically shooting a bow, give them something to do other than go to the gym, you know, because most people, you know, it's funny because I've been in the fitness industry, buddy. Like, my mom was in the fitness industry back in the 80s. So like my first exposure to fitness was the bodybuilding era and the aerobics and jazzercise era. So my mom was an aerobics instructor and a trainer at this really small gym in a really small town in Idaho, Bonner's Ferry. And I would get off school and I'd go to the gym and I'd spend probably 3 hours there while my mom and dad were, you know, in there working out and working. And so my first exposure was bodybuilding and aerobics. And I always tell people that I was the only boy. We had a aerobics recital. And I was the only boy in the recital at age 8. At age 8, up on stage doing aerobics, you know, doing the whole, like, you know, aerobics thing. And I think that it really set the tone for me as a young kid that, you know, to just integrate, you know, fitness and training into my life. And so it fit really well because I was, you know, I started into athletics and you know, as a young kid, I played softball and basketball, and I started wrestling really early. And as we progressed, I you know, in junior high, I played basketball and wrestled and played football and did track, and then played some baseball some softball in the summer. And then finally, when I turned 13, I started playing baseball again, you know. So really my whole life has been about training and sports And yeah. really in the fall, dude, it was really like the fall was just like grab a gun and go kill a deer. That was it. Like that was my childhood of hunting. I, you know, grew up in a family where meat was a priority. So we weren't by any means trophy hunters. And as my grandpa used to say, if you're hungry, you're picking up a gun, not a bow.
Yeah.
That's kind of a background on me. I had extensive background in sports and was growing up in a hunting community by a hunting father and learned, you know, outdoorsmanship and hunting and ethics and conservation all just kind of by growing up in that manner. So
no, that's awesome.
I mean,
I have this image of you, you know, holding your bow from one of the competitions doing step aerobics, and it's kind of messing me up a little bit. I gotta be honest.
Oh, I'll tell you, like I said, the whole gamut from the first time I took an aerobics class, I was in the first grade, and my mom was coming to the school, and she was teaching the first graders, you know, basically this aerobics dance style, and I've been in it for a long time, and it's evolved obviously throughout the years. It's amazing how the fitness and health industry is kind of this moving target. You know, everything from the definition of fitness to appropriate movements to nutrition has always been a moving target. It always keeps you on your toes, and you have to always be learning. So
yeah, for sure. You know, like I've found like. Just from my career, as interesting as nutrition can be, I just don't spend as much time as a lot of people do on nutrition because it is always moving, and you just have so many trends and you have so many things that you have to reteach or teach people because of how quick things change in the public, in the culture, in the public eye, and stuff like that. It's like, man, you know, the basics are going to work for most people. You know, you look at your plate, make sure there's some veggies on it, make sure there's some lean protein, a little bit of fat, you're probably going to be all right, you know? And I've always just focused more on the activity because most of my interests fall in being more efficient as an athlete and moving better through space and all that stuff. So I've just always kind of skewed towards movement. You know, I have clients that have no idea that I can give them a good nutritional plan because I put on the back burner so often because I've seen just behavior change with movement affect nutrition just psychologically. It just happens, you know. It's pretty cool. But that's a huge, you know, that's a huge deep dive, but I think, you know, what you're saying, how it is such a moving target, this space is for sure. I think what you're doing is going to get really, really, really big here eventually because it's kind of a new thing, you know.
Yeah. And the one thing that will always hold true is that there's always going to be specific movements that are sport specific, right? And that's where train to hunt came into play. Was I was training, you know, football players, volleyball players, baseball players, and just general fitness people. And I realized that, you know, there's a lot to be said about the sport specific movements that are within the activity of hiking and hunting. Period. Like just that you don't necessarily hit on if you're just doing this general fitness pattern and any other sport. So if you are getting ready specifically for a hunting season, there are definitely some things that you should probably be focusing on towards, you know, moving towards the event itself. So that's why I thought, man, there's just nobody out there doing it. And in 2010, dude, there was nobody doing it. Oh, I Googled it. I was looking. I was like, if you Googled train for hunting or train to be hunting or anything like that, it was all about dogs. You got everything about dog training. Yeah, it was all dog training. And here, fast forward 10 years, now you put train for hunting and you get, I don't know, 15, 20 different businesses out there who are training hunters, which is great.
What are the sport specific considerations for hunters in general? I mean, and you know, like the West Coast is so much different than the East Coast in a lot of ways. We can speak to North America. There are going to be different needs based on where you are geographically, but in the general sense of the idea, when you were coming up with movements that would help hunters, what were you focusing on?
So admittedly, I focused mostly on the Western hunter at the beginning, and just kind of made a blanket statement over all of hunting that if you want to hunt longer into your life. If you really enjoy hunting, whether you're hunting in the West or the Midwest or the East, or if even if you all you do is blind hunt or tree stand hunt, and it's not really this huge physical demand that you have to, you know, cover tons of uneven terrain over you know, a few days, is that you need that you need to have a certain amount of fitness in your life just so that you can stay healthy enough to hunt into your 70s and 80s. Right. If you want to have that opportunity to continue to do something you love, you have to have a general fitness. But to answer your question, really the big thing that you have to do as a hunter is that you have to prepare your body to move loads, whether, you know, light, medium, or heavy, you know, light being a day pack, medium being, you know, moving camp into a spike camp situation, whether it be two to 8 miles off of, you know, from a road, or heavy being, you know, moving your weight, whether it be a mule deer or a whitetail or an elk or whatever, you know, you're hunting, from the kill site to your vehicle, which and that's what you have to prepare your body for, that which really specifically means, you know, your shoulders, your hips, your knees, and keeping those things healthy requires some sports, you know, some specific things that you really just need to be focusing on, not just as you move towards the event being the hunt itself, but year round, you know. Yeah. For example, you know, really working on hips, you know, doing banded lateral walks for that glute med, or side planks with leg lifts, or, you know, really taking care of that, the chassis or the core of your stabilizer muscles, so that when you do put weight on your back, the thing that's moving the weight is your legs, and everything between your legs and the weight that you're moving has to be stable. The more stable it is, the less likely you are to get injured trying to move that weight. Right. So, you know, making sure that you're doing all your pre-workout injury prevention stuff. Like I mentioned, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things you can do.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And then just doing it, just putting a pack on and moving weight, you know, with weight in your pack.
So let's bring it to real life scenarios. So you've been a hunter for most of your life.
Yep.
Give us an effort. Like what's one of your bigger, tougher efforts out in the field that you've experienced, and what, you know, how long did it take? How much ground were you covering? How heavy was the pack? What's your build for people to relate to you as an athlete? I think that'd be interesting.
So, I'm 5'10", in my shoes. And about 180 pounds. Okay. Like I fluctuate between 175 and 185, depending on, you know, how the day. And my toughest pack to date was, it was 2 years ago. My brother and I went to Alaska and we went on a dull sheep hunt. We both ended up both shot sheep on day 10 or day 8, and we were getting picked up on day 10. We were 8 miles as the crow flies from our pickup spot. And we had just over 24 hours, we had about 36 hours to get those two sheep and our camp back to the airstrip. So our packs were about 160, 165 pounds apiece, because we had full sheep and our, you know, full sheep in our packs, and we had to come down off this rocky terrain, across a big marshy flat, over a couple other mountain ranges, and then out to the airstrip. So, from the time we started the pack, we started the pack at 8 o'clock at night on Thursday. And we were, we've got back to the strip, what time was it? It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. And then we had to turn around and go back, get our camp and back up. So all said and done, all said and done, the pack out with the 165 pound pack, it took what, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, plus 12. It took about 18 hours.
Oof.
18 out. Yeah, 18 hours in a 165 pound pack in the pouring rain. And for about six of those hours, we were about mid calf deep in water over across the tundra. So, but that's pretty extreme, you know what I mean? Scott, that's pretty extreme. But
oh yeah,
that's the idea.
You're not going over like manicured trails. It's very dynamic footing the slick the water. I mean, I've been to Alaska before. It's crazy how much it rains out there too.
Yeah, so it was an extreme pack. It took us all together, I think it took us 20, like just under 24 hours to get the meat and our camp of basically we were on our feet for 24 hours minus a 2-hour nap. to get our gear and the meat back to the airstrip. And
how big is your brother?
Ryan's the same size as I am. He's 5'10", 180 pounds.
So you guys had 15 pounds to spare.
Yep, exactly.
That's crazy. I'm just thinking, like, I mean, you had to be sore for a week after that.
You know, I was fairly sore the next day, but we had covered about 120 miles the prior 7 days.
So you're conditioned up.
So yeah, you know, we were doing that. We covered about 120 miles with roughly 65, 70 pound packs. So it was just one of those, you know,
your body's ready.
And we had prepared year round. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, that is the advantage of training year round, is that you just kind of build this up and build it up and build up, and knowing very fair well that we were going to be going into a situation where we could very likely be having to be on our feet for a long period of time. We did things along the way that tested, you know, tested our gear, tested our nutrition, tested, you know, our training programs. We did we went Grand Canyon and went from the, I think it's the south rim to the north rim to the south rim. It's basically, we tried to do it in 24 hours. I think we got it done in just under 19 hours. And so that's 46 mile trek in 19 hours. And just at the end of that, you learn a lot after that. You know, it's like, okay, my nutrition wasn't quite dialed. I learned that, you know, I need to take salt tablets throughout the day if I'm going to do a big trek like that. So there's a lot of things that, if that's your thing, and it's mine, I call it adventure hunting. If that's your thing, if you like to adventure hunt, you should be doing some, you know, some testing along the way just to see how your nutrition and gear hold up. So, yeah. Anyway,
when you had to go grab your camp again, how much easier was that? Was that harder because you just had all that weight on you and you're a little beat up, or was it a relief?
Buddy, it was like flying. It was unbelievable. Like, part of the advantage was, so the whole story is we left the kill site where we shot those sheep, and we were aware of this bear, this grizzly bear that was right in our path that we had to take in order to get out of there. It was pitch dark. We were in headlamps. We knew there was a grizzly bear close or in the area.
Right.
It's pouring down rain. So we spent, you know, that whole night was in the rain, in the water, on high alert, in the dark. So when we got back to the airstrip and dropped the gear and we could go back in the light, number one, it was a lot. We took a lot easier, our path was a lot easier because we could see where we were going. We didn't just have to like look at our GPS and say, okay, I think we need to go this way. We could follow the terrain and avoid all the big marshy spots. It wasn't raining. The sun was out. So yeah, it was a really lot easier trek there and back. In fact, I think we did it in, gosh, I think we did that in like 11 hours. It was a lot. Yeah, it was a lot quicker trip.
No, it's awesome. I think just painting that picture for people to know what the needs are physically is pretty interesting, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, a typical, like if you're going to come out west and hunt elk, I would say typically you want to prepare for being able to do, you know, between 5 and 10 miles a day. Obviously, it's not a race, but you always want to prepare for the pack out. Because if you can prepare for, you know, like a 7 to 10 mile pack out with around roughly 100 pounds on your back, you'll be able to do the day-to-day stuff pretty easily.
Yeah. No, it's kind of like, you know, like people will do the obstacle course races and they want to go, you know, carry buckets and get on monkey bars all day. Really, you need to go run.
you do. And more importantly, you just need to move with weight on your back, because right. if you're going to be sore, it's going to be in your hips and your shoulders and your back.
You cannot mimic like a big heavy rock. You just can't.
You really can't.
You got to do it. It's crazy. It's kind of like snowboard. Like, I'm a snowboarder. I met my wife on a mountain, and I'm in as good a shape as I've ever been right now. And if I go out on a good powder day or a decent day, my legs are going to burn out after about 3 hours, no matter what, first time, if I'm not out consistently. You know, I just think it's that sports specificity is just huge for all these really unique niche movements.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So getting into, so you're going to talk to a complete novice when it comes to hunting. Okay.
Okay.
Complete novice when it comes to, I mean, this is my MO, Ken, like I golf growing up. I used my grandfather's hand-me-down clubs pretty much my whole life, and I got to where I could shoot in the low 80s, high 70s. My buddies are buying like new gear all the time. I would focus on the craft, right? And then yeah. move to Colorado, mountain bike, and have a crappy friggin' old bike that's heavier than all my buddies. And I would focus on the fitness of it because I wouldn't care. Eventually, you know, I got a decent bike. But I think diving into new sports, like the tools that you have to use, that's where the barrier to entry is intimidating, I think, for a lot of people, myself included. So diving into this sport and as an accountability way to let the world know that I'm about to go make a fool of myself in the Springs on April 27th, I'm really pumped to go make a fool of myself. I'm going to do this competition, and I want to learn about the needs for the competition, but I do want to learn, you know, we'll kind of speckle in like the hunting part of it, because your competition is very interesting. And I think a lot of people listening would be really stoked to go try something like this, you know? So yeah. I guess before we get too deep into it, what is Train to Hunt? Like the competition, what do people do? Is it, you know, I know a little bit about this part of it, but for people listening first time,
yeah,
paint a picture.
Okay, so Train to Hunt is what it is a measuring stick on what I believe a good hunter and a successful hunter needs physically to be successful. Now, over the years, you can imagine how many emails I've got about you don't need to be physically fit to be a good hunter. I agree. I don't want to get a bunch of emails about how you don't need to be fit to be a hunter, because I understand. And I also understand that fitness and physical attributes are just one piece of the puzzle. So that's what I'm going to cover right now. And that's what Train to Hunt is meant for. The Train to Hunt Challenge is meant to measure your hunting fitness, which is moving over uneven, rugged terrain. How efficient are you at that? How efficient are you at moving with weight on your back? And how well can you shoot in a stressful situation? Because as I think we can all, no matter whether you've ever shot a bow or not, if you've ever competed, it's one thing to practice, whether it be throwing darts or shooting pool or, you know, snowboarding or whatever it might be, racing, foot racing, bike racing. It's one thing to go out and have a good training session. It's a whole nother animal to skill to be able to manage your nerves and manage the mental side of competition. And that's what Train to Hunt does, because when you first get a chance to harvest an animal with a bow, your heart is going to beat through your chest, and you're going to have this big shot of adrenaline, and you're going to find, I've seen very seasoned bow hunters blow it at the time of opportunity because they couldn't control their nerves. They couldn't control the stressful situation. So the Train Hunt Challenge is designed for you to find out how well you shoot under stress, how well you move your body over terrain with weight on your back, and then just gives you a general idea on how well you can move your body through space without any weight via burpees and get ups and box step overs. And we have you have to lift a sandbag and throw it over your head, which is, mimicking the idea of picking your pack up off the ground and putting it on your back. So that's really what the Train to Hunt Challenge is. It's a good measuring stick on like, okay, when you get done with it, you're going to say, all right, these are the things that I need to work on. And I don't care if you're a seasoned veteran or if you're somebody who's just starting out. Now, you're going to have an idea. You're going to say, hey, I really need to spend more time in my pack, or man, you know what? I can shoot the lights out standing in my backyard, but as soon as my heart rate gets up a little bit, I kind of lose it and I lose focus. So that's what the Train Hunt Challenge is. It's basically exercise, run, shoot. So you do a small challenge, whether it be, over the box step ups, you do 10 of those, you do a small trail run, you come back, you pick up your bow, and you shoot a target that's 30 yards away. It's standing it's broadside. It's not moving. You just have to shoot it. But there's a competition aspect, when there's more on the line, it tends to stress people out, and you find out who can shoot under stress and who can't.
I can't miss it 30 yards, can I?
You'd be surprised. Here's the key. The key to success is this: be pretty fit. Like, come into it pretty fit. Know your limitations. Control your nerves at the beginning. Don't just blow out of the gates as fast as you can. It's kind of like running a mile, right? Like, if you're going to go out there and race somebody in a mile, you're not just going to sprint the first 400 yards and burn out. And then when it comes to shooting, you definitely want to practice. You want to do some running and shooting at home and find out, like, okay, how long is it going to take me to recover from this run in order for me to be able to pull my bow up and take a good clean shot and not be moving all around or really, breathing through my eyeballs.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So, oh yeah. I have a friend, one of my longtime clients, she trains for the, modern pentathlon down at the Olympic Training Center with a program that the Army has now. She's training kind of independently, and she joined the Army because of this great program where that's her job right now, is to train for the Olympics. And, one of the disciplines for modern pentathlon is shooting a pistol, but they're all lasers now, of course. But the last day, so they do, there's trick riding on horses, and then there's swimming and then there's fencing. It's the weirdest competition ever. And then the last day, based on where you stand, you have a 1 kilometer run followed by 10 shots times three. And wherever you stand is where you start on that last day. So if you're a little behind in points, then you start behind the runners and the shooters. So it puts a lot of pressure on the front runners. And yeah, just to go watch the competition and how their breathing patterns to calm everything down, because you're running a 1K as fast as you can, which is freaking hard, as you know. It's just pretty wild. And it's making me think. So for me, who, I think I told you I've shot a bow 2 or 3 times my whole life, maybe 4, I don't know, not a lot, maybe 3 shots every time, buddies back east that have bows and we just go mess around.
Yeah.
I got a bow now. Charlie hooked it up.
Nice.
I have not had it fitted yet.
You're going to want to do that.
No, this is why this is funny, Ken. This is ridiculous. Yeah. And this is how I do stuff, but I haven't had it fitted yet. I'm going to go down to the shop here. I need to get some arrows cut, apparently, and I'm going to act like I know the terminology. I'm going to get some arrows cut for me. Figure that out. I got to get a quick release. Don't have that. So yeah, we're pretty green over here, but one question before we get into all of that, cause I want to go into the technical stuff, cause there's people that are nervous about this stuff all over the place, who really want to do it. But, the first time that I grab my bow and I get some basics, like, I have tons of buddies who can shoot really well and know what they're doing, so I'm going to take some advice from those guys. But learning how to do this from day one, is it something where you should, like, start off winded, like, start practice that from day one so it's intuitive, or learn the really basic skills first? Just as a curiosity as a coach.
Definitely learn what it's supposed to feel like using technique and proper release technique. You shouldn't start off by right out of the gate by trying to settle your heart rate and get a good shot off. The reason is because you need to know what a good, it's called a break, right? So like in archery, when you draw your bow back, You should be able to get, you shouldn't have any like jerky, trigger pull. Basically they call it punching the trigger, right? So it should just be a nice smooth, you kind of keep pulling, and it's a surprise break. All right. Now, in order to be, you need to learn the technique. You need to get your bow tuned. You need to have somebody, properly teach you, you know, hand position, that bow, that with your bow hand, you know, how to anchor, what are some things that you need to think about? You know, are you going to use a back tension release? Are you going to use a trigger release? You need to figure all that stuff out and really learn how to shoot a bow, before you introduce, I think is a more advanced skill, which is being able to shoot, with your heart rate slightly elevated. Because if you just pick up a bow and start doing some training and shooting and all at the same time, you don't really have an idea about
what you're trying to do.
What a proper shot feels like. You know right. what I mean? It's like, it'd be like, it's hard to really compare it to anything, but if you had never swung a bat before,
right,
and someone says, okay, here's a bat, go hit the ball. And in this, you know, say in this game, first time you ever picked up a bat, you're going to, you know, go out and hit in this game. There's some added pressure to this game. Oh yeah, by the way, the game's on the line, yeah. right? So you're like, man, shouldn't I learn how to swing this thing before I actually, you know, put any pressure behind it? And so that's the closest thing I can okay. relate it to.
All right, let's talk about the tool. Let's talk about the bow. So I'm going to go downstairs, open okay. the case, and look at this thing, and it looks like a freaking alien tool. You know, I thought bow and arrow was I'm kind of joking, of course, but you know, right. bow and arrow is supposed to be a string and a piece of bowed wood, right? So, right. Let's go over some terminology for beginners like myself when we're okay. looking at a bow. You know, I know this is audio and everything, but
yeah,
let's just go over some basics on that.
Okay, so the basics of a bow are you have your riser, your cams. The riser is basically where your front hand, the hand that's holding the bow is holding the grip, and the riser is everything. It's basically, you know, probably 12 inches above the grip and 12 inches below. And you'll notice that there are limbs connected to the riser. Those are the limbs. You can get those limbs, you know, you can get different poundage of limbs, you know, that vary from, you know, basically 20 pounds all the way up to probably 90 pounds now. But, I would always recommend that, if you're first starting to shoot, make sure that you get limbs that it's really easy to pull. You shouldn't struggle pulling your bow. You don't, because if you struggle pulling your bow, number one, you're not going to be able to shoot as much without risk of injury. And number two, you just have an added stress of trying to hold that bow back while you're trying to shoot. Even if there is a lot of release, obviously those cams turn over. The cams are the wheels of the end. When they turn over, it takes a lot of the tension off of the string so that you're not holding, you know, 60 or 70 pounds back. You're usually holding about, you know, anywhere between 60 and 80% let off, so less than that.
Okay.
Does that make sense so uh-huh. far?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you got your riser, you got your limbs, you got your cams, which are the wheels at the end, and then you got your string. Basically, this string is where you're going to knock the arrow. The arrow goes on. Nowadays, you rarely see any knocks. It's usually a D-loop, which is basically just a loop in the middle of your string so that it lines it when your arrow sits on the rest, the arrow rest, which is right above the grip on the bow. And you have various types of rests. Nowadays, the fall-away rest kind of rules the day. You don't see too many flipper rests except for on recurves these days. But a fall-away rest, so you're going to knock your arrow into your D-loop. Your arrow is sitting out there on your rest. And then, you know, you have a sight on the bow, which is beyond your grip. And it's usually multicolored pins, each pin representing a certain yardage, whether it be, you know, usually from the top it's 20 and then 30, 40, 50, and then, you know, whether you want it just depends on how many pins you want. I recommend for people who are just starting out, you don't need any more than probably 3 pins, you know, because you're the first little bit, probably first year, maybe 2, you're probably not going to be shooting much further than 40 yards anyway. If you are going to participate in a train to hunt competition, you will want the means to be able to shoot out to at least 50 yards. So that's a good tidbit for those of you who are picking up a bow. Great. Like yourself, Scott, for the first time, you're going to want at least a 50-yard pin. And then you have your release, which is, you know, it's again, there's so many different styles of releases. The differences being there's a back tension release, which is basically exactly, well, it's what it sounds like. You hook it on, you pull it with your hand instead of being a strap around your wrist. Yeah, like a trigger. So you pull it, and a back tension release is really good because it eliminates any kind of trigger punch, because you pull the bow back, and a back tension release is designed that you're going to hold your bow back, you're anchored, you know, usually right behind your jaw or somewhere in that area. You're looking down, you know, looking through a peep that's on your string. You're lining up your pins on your target, and then you start to pinch your shoulder blades together, which creates tension on the string. Once the tension reaches a certain poundage, which is, you know, 1 pound or an additional 1 pound or 1.5 pounds or 2 pounds, the bow just lets go, and boom, and your arrow's off. So cool. Yeah, it's the dangerous side of a back tension release, or, you know, is that if you don't get one with a safety, if you don't pull your bow just right, it can release prematurely, and you end up punching yourself in the face. So,
ooh, that's not good.
Yeah, there's some, but you can get them with release. You can get them with safeties, or just have somebody teach you how to pull those back tension releases correctly, and you won't have that problem. So,
okay, what do you recommend for the train to hunt type stuff?
You know what, I would say 80% or 90% of our competitors use a trigger release, just because I think that's control. Just the way they like to, it gives them more control. But you know, through the years, I've seen more back tension releases at the train to hunt. You just have to practice with them more and more. And if you start out with a back tension release, then it'll be easier probably than trying to go from a trigger release to a back tension release. But you got to try all the releases. That's one thing I would say to you, is that spend some time in all types of releases and find out which one you like the best, and use that. Yeah.
So for like the trigger releases, like you kind of have like the open hook, or like the hook that goes around both sides.
Yeah, you can have the open hook. You can have the clamp style release.
So much.
Or like the jaws release, or the jaws clamp. I prefer the hook, just because it's a lot easier to get on that D loop, you know, rather than have to line it up. And, you know, especially if you've just been running and you're trying to take deep breaths and get your heart rate down.
Hands are shaking a little.
Your hand, you know, there's potential for a little bit of shaking, and that hook, you just hook it. You just hook it right on there and put some tension on it, and now you're ready to go. So I personally shoot a hook release. So cool. I guess that's my recommendation.
All right, so I'm going to grab my bow. I'm going to get all this stuff fitted up for me, because you got to fit it to your wingspan, your size, and all that good stuff. So I'll take care of that stuff with the local shop. But from somebody who does this a lot, and I'm about to go out there for the first time, let's assume I don't have any of my buddies with me.
Okay.
And I'm about to throw an arrow on for the first time ever by myself.
Yep.
Give me like one or two things that I absolutely have to do that first time.
Okay, so the first thing I would do is I will get really close to whatever you're shooting at.
Okay.
Get, I don't know, probably, you know, 10 feet from what you're shooting at, and work on a nice, smooth surprise release. Work on your release, work on your release, work on your release, because just like shooting a rifle, it's really just about trigger pull. It's about getting a good, solid break. And if once you have mastered your release, everything else is a lot easier. But if you are trying to, but if you don't have a smooth release, everything's going to just be hard forever, you know? And even people who start over and go, okay, I need to go back to the basics because I can't shoot past 40 yards. The basics is the release. So if you're going out there by yourself, Scott, here's what I'd do. Grab your arrows, go stand 10 feet from your target. Don't even worry about aiming the reason you're so close is because you don't really want to worry about aiming. You just want to pull that bow back, anchor, meaning you want to find a spot where your hand is going to touch the back of your jaw. It's usually like right below your ear. And then you're going to look through that peep and just nice, smooth release. And if it surprises you when it goes off, then you did it right.
Nice.
Okay. Then you did it right. The key to a consistent release is you have to have the same anchor points every time. And I'm no instructor, I'm not trying to pose as one, but I'm just passing on the information that I've learned throughout my life, and that is you really want to have two anchor points. I think a common two anchor points is your pointer finger knuckle at the same spot behind your jaw, and your nose on the string, or some people put kisser buttons. They're just like little plastic buttons that touches the corner of their mouth. So you have two spots that keep you consistent. You have the knuckle behind the jaw, and you have the kisser button in the corner of your mouth, or your knuckle behind your jaw and your nose anchored on the string. And some guys will put like a little knock or a little button on their string so that the tip of their nose touches that same spot on their string as well. So
cool.
That's the short of it. And then I just shoot until that release feels really good, and then back up to 10 yards and then start aiming. And okay, if I can hit this spot if I can hit this spot every time for the next 5 arrows, then I'm going to back up 10 yards. If I can hit it every time with 5 arrows, then I'm going to back up a little bit.
No, but this is basketball. I got this.
Yep. Start close and move your way back. Yep.
I like it. I'm getting pumped. You're getting me pumped, man. All right. So like I said, like definitely it's impossible to cover everything on one show. I do have a couple other questions just for, Train to Hunt in Colorado is on April 17th. First of all, I haven't even mentioned this yet. Go to train2hunt.com. That's the website for all this information. He's got an awesome membership site on there for the training piece of it. That gives you guys a lot of resources. Events, you can click on that to see where these events are. We're heading down to the Springs, April 27th weekend. And I think we got a big old group going down there too, Ken, which will be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's a couple of questions though for the actual event.
Okay.
So it's a 2-day event, right?
That's right. Two days event. The first day is the Train to Hunt Challenge course. And the second day is just a 3D shoot.
How long does the challenge course take people?
The challenge course is going to be right around 20 minutes. It's about 20 minutes. You know, there's some people who do it a little quicker. There's some people that take a little longer, and it's a combination of you're going to do four exercises, 4 arrows, put on a fairly light pack, 50 pounds all the way down to, you know, depending on your age and gender, we go clear down to 15 pounds. And then you're going to do about a 1 mile loop in your pack and shoot a couple targets along the way and cool. finish. So, yeah, roughly 20 minutes. It's about a 20-minute course, and that includes all the shooting.
Cool. Yeah, I think next time we talk, we'll talk about the course more because that's a huge deep dive for sure. And then I did have a couple questions for people. So for people who really think this is interesting, whether the hunting aspect of it or the competition aspect of it, getting a new bow, training for the stuff, that's going to be a whole nother conversation. I think we can tell people, you need to be anaerobically fit. You got to be strong. You got to push weight around, get uncomfortable in your training. Like that's both of our expertise. We can go deep into that thing. But from a gear standpoint, where can people start? Should people buy used bows? Can you rent them? I don't even know like what that world is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, if you're interested in starting, archery, I would just go on some of the forums, go to like Rock Slide, and there's a handful of forums out there that you can get a bow for about half price. I mean, just because there's a ton of people out there who buy a new bow every single year, and they sell last year's model for about half of what you would pay for this year's model.
Nice.
So you should be able to get into a bow setup for around, you know, $600, $500 or $600, which I know that's quite a bit of money, but that's the new bows are going to for a new bow setup, you're looking at $1,500.
Yeah.
So if you can budget, honestly, I think if you had a budget of $300, you could find a bow out there. Honestly, in the last, I'd say probably 5 years, if you can find a bow that's made within the last 5 years, maybe 6 years, it's going to do everything you need it to do. Just to get started, like, it's going to have good let off. It's going to have, good, it's going to shoot well. How about that?
Right.
You know, there's not a lot of bows out there that you're going to buy and go, man, this thing is a real piece of junk. Like I shouldn't have bought it.
Right.
The technology has been around now for 10 years, probably that really turned the way bows shoot. You can't really go wrong with really any bow that you can pick up these days that are 5 years or younger.
Nice, man. All right. So if you guys want to try out one of these events, Athlete on Fire, all lowercase for 10% off any of the events, go check that out. Trainahunt.com on the events tab up top. The last thing before we go today, this is crazy. I have millions of other questions, but the last thing, I always like to have people give like a good set or a good training set or workout for people. So for people, for the type of world that you're in, Kenton, what is a good training session, workout, set, challenge that you can give people that's really specific that they can go try out today?
Man, that's a good question. I have so many of them rattling around in my head. My training really focuses a lot on moving. If you want to be specific, it just depends on if you want something with your bow or if you just want a training session that you can do anywhere with anything and you don't need a bow or anything like that. Is that what we're kind of looking
for?
Yeah,
let's go no bow so we can reach the most people possible right now.
Okay. So what I'd recommend is obviously you want to do a good warm up, and then I think grabbing a sandbag and a box or a cooler or anything that you can do that you have that you can step up on that's anywhere between 16 and 20 inches tall. So do a variety of movements and just time yourself. Like really what you're looking for is in the hunting world is you want stamina and endurance and enough power to move yourself up and over boxes. So grab a sandbag that, you know, it's medium weight, nothing silly heavy, somewhere between probably 30 and, you know, for you beasts out there, 70 pounds. And let's just do this. Let's just go 20 over the box step ups, holding the sandbag either on your shoulders or in a cradle position. So you're going to go up and over the box 20 times, and then you're going to take that sandbag and you're going to throw it over the box and step over and grab it and throw it over the box and do that 20 times. And then you're going to grab the sandbag and kind of hug it, lay flat on your back, do a get up with a sandbag, right? So you're going to do a get up and stand up, get lay down, stand up, lay down, stand up, and do that 20 times. So over the box step ups, holding it, and then what we call a log toss. So throw it over 20 times, and then do 20 get ups holding the sandbag. That's going to do a lot of things, and you can do that. Now, there's a lot of ways you can measure that. You can just do one round. You can just do 20, 20, and 20, and call it good. Or you could do that cycle as many times as you can. Say in 30 minutes, 60 minutes. You could, you know, for some of you out there that want to really test yourself, 60 minutes is a lot. It's a long time to be doing just to be moving. Or you can just say, I'm going to do it for 5 rounds and just time yourself. How long can I, you know, how quick can I get 5 rounds, which is 100 of each of these movements done? So
I like it. One question for the get-ups.
Yep.
Hugging the sandbag to your chest with one arm and doing a get-up, right?
Yep. Yeah, because a lot of people don't have the mobility to grab it with both arms, lay down, and then stand up. As long as the sandbag doesn't leave, as long as it stays in contact with your body, you can just squeeze it with one arm, go down on one knee and one hand, lay down on your back, and then get up, you know, the same way, basically one step up and stand up. Yep.
Sweet. So you can switch sides on those for sure.
Yep. That's definitely awesome, man. Should.
Yeah. I think I like the, for newbies out there, go try it one time with like a 20 or 30 pound bag for you guys who want to get after it. I think I like the 5. That's a good even number, 100 of everything.
Yeah, I do 5 rounds of that, and I'd like to see how quick guys can get through that. It's that's a lot of work done, especially if you're a beast and you pick on a 50 to 70 pound bag. The nice thing about this, Scott, is that it really encompasses a ton of specific movements that you're gonna encounter in a hunt. You know, walking uphill, walking downhill. Having to be explosive in being able to throw that bag across and then stepping up and over. And then the get ups are huge in just being able to have the mobility and the strength to get off the ground holding that sandbag. So
have you done this one enough to know a decent baseline for people that are at different levels?
No, I haven't. I vary my workout so much that I'll tell you what, I can give you a pretty decent idea though. It'd be about, give me just a second. I would say that if you can get if you can get that in under 30 minutes, you're doing well. If you can get 5 rounds in under 30 minutes, you're doing well. You're advanced, I would say. Okay. About five minutes around is what I would gather people. It would take most people because the get ups, doing 20 get ups is going to take you somewhere around 3 minutes.
Yeah. Those first two, not scary. Get ups, 20.
Right.
Yeah, that's hurting.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man.
So I'd say if you can get it somewhere between 25 and 30 minutes, you're smoking it.
Awesome. Well, questions I didn't get to that we will eventually, in my mind anyway, is, like, how do you decide what content that you're using? Because you are putting out a lot of stuff. I think that's interesting. I think diving into some more of the skill stuff and tactics for train to hunt, what really works well when you're out there, because you've watched so many people go through these competitions. I think that's interesting. Specific periodized training up to some of these events without giving away the house. But I think that's, people are definitely interested in that kind of stuff.
And
I think just more storytelling from the field, man. That's always very interesting for myself and other people. So things I didn't get to, but awesome. Kenton, this is a great talk, man. Great to kind of break the ice and get more of the world to know what you're working on. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on, Scott. Appreciate it.
And that, I believe, is that, man. didn't even scratch the surface. I have a list of questions here I wanted to get to, but I want to keep these shows manageable. I'm happy to bring Kenton back on. We will do that here in the next week or two. I can guarantee it. I'm still about to figure all this stuff out. Try not to make a complete fool out of myself. But the question I had for you guys is, for the things that were obvious that I missed, what would you like to learn from Kenton and other people in this world? And what questions would you like for yourself from the fitness standpoint? Maybe I can help you with some of those questions, and maybe we can brainstorm those on the next time we have them on here. So the specific ones for bow hunting and shooting and archery in general, and specific fitness questions. Would love to get some of those. You can shoot me a message, scott@athleteonfire.com, and we'll ramp those questions up for the next time we hop on. Thanks a lot, guys.